Warning, some material discussed on South Carolina Spook Show may be too intense for a younger audience. Listener discretion is advised. College is an exciting time in any young person's life. New cities, new adventures, and an opportunity to start fresh. But for USC senior Samantha Josephson, a fun night out with friends ended in tragedy. My name is Blake Mosley, and this is South Carolina Spook Show. Stay tuned. Murder of Samantha Josephson, a student at the University of South Carolina in Columbia, South Carolina, occurred on March 29, 2019. Josephson, who was 21, had ordered an Uber and mistakenly entered a car that she thought was her ride. The murderer, Nathaniel Rowland, used childproof locks to prevent Josephson from leaving the vehicle and kidnapped and murdered her, leaving her body near New Zion, about 65 miles from Columbia, where she had entered Rowland's car. The killing attracted national attention and led to discussion about the dangers of ride-sharing and the importance of ensuring that a rideshare car is being driven by a registered driver prior to entering. The murder led to the passage of SAMI's law in New Jersey, which enhances protections for drivers and passengers using rideshare services. Legislation of the same name at the federal level was signed into law by President Joe Biden on January 5, 2023. Nathaniel Rowland has now received a life sentence for the abduction and the killing of Samantha Josephson. A jury found the 27-year-old guilty of Samantha Josephson's murder on July 27, 2021. Here we take a look at his life and what led to the killing. Rowland, who was 24 at the time of the killing, is a resident of New Zion in Clarendon County. He had studied at East Clarendon School and played basketball, according to Greenville Online. Rowland had one past felony arrest in South Carolina from October of 2018 for obtaining a signature or property under false pretenses, according to the State Law Enforcement Division, or SLED. According to his Facebook page, he attended the South Carolina State University in 2017, but the school's chief of staff in 2019 confirmed that he was not a student there at the time of Samantha's killing. Samantha got into Rowland's car after a night out in Columbia's Five Points Entertainment District, thinking that it was an Uber ride that she would take back to her apartment, prosecutors said. Instead, she found herself trapped because Rowland had the childproof locks on. She was never seen alive again. Her body was later found with 120 stab wounds in the remote woods 65 miles from Columbia. No outright motive for the killing was suggested by prosecutors during the course of Rowland's trial, but Judge Newman said the killer was, quote-unquote, totally heartless. The judge said the case was the most severe murder he had seen in the court before. He told the court, quote, I've dealt with the heartless, and you fall into that category, without any remorse whatsoever. A person who is totally emotionless and what the law would call a depraved heart, unquote. Asked by news reporters what Rowland's motive might have been, prosecutor Byron Gibson said, quote, it was absolutely a random act of violence. That's one of those questions Mr. Rowland would have to answer at some point in time, unquote. Samantha Josephson, who was from Robbinsville, New Jersey, was a student at the University of South Carolina where she majored in political science. Josephson, who was a senior at the time of her death, had planned to graduate in 2019 and go on to study law at Drexel University School of Law. During her time at USC, she had studied abroad in Barcelona and visited Madrid and Paris. Josephson had spent the night before her death at the Five Points District in downtown Columbia with some friends. She left a bar at 2 a.m. and had ordered an Uber home and mistakenly got into Rowland's car, thinking that it was her ride. Detectives said that she had just ordered a Lyft on the popular Hail a Ride app, but the real Uber driver later canceled the journey after she failed to show up. During the sentencing, her devastated mom, Marcy Josephson, said, quote, Her dreams were my dreams, and her death was my death. I close my eyes and I feel what she endured at his hands. Roland was seen by cops driving a car that matched the description of the one that Josephson was seen entering in CCTV footage. He was caught and arrested on March 20th, 2019. Inside the vehicle, police found a container of liquid bleach, germicidal wipes, and window cleaner. The car also contained Samantha's cell phone, and a large amount of blood was also discovered on the back seat. Investigators also found cleaning supplies and a two-bladed knife with Josephson's blood on them after searching the trash can behind Roland's girlfriend's residence. Josephson's DNA was also collected from Roland's fingernails. He was charged with kidnapping, murder, and possession of a weapon during the commission of a crime in April of 2019. Roland was sentenced to life in prison on July 27, 2021. A jury unanimously found him guilty of Samantha's murder after an hour-long deliberation. Roland maintained his innocence before being sentenced, with his attorneys pointing out that scientists weren't certain that his DNA was on the knife. The judge who sentenced Roland said, quote, "She obviously put up an amazing fight against you and left a sufficient trail for the jury to see what you did." Prosecutors did not choose to seek the death penalty in Roland's case, but he will spend the rest of his life behind bars after the jury found him guilty on three counts of murder, kidnapping, and possession of a weapon during a violent crime. South Carolina's last execution took place in 2011, and there are currently 37 men on death row right now. Coming up on South Carolina Spook Show, if there's one thing that we've all learned on this podcast, it's that bridges are a hotbed for paranormal activity. Although Forest Bridge in the upstate isn't known for its ghost stories, there have been an uncanny amount of mysterious deaths and murders in its history. And later, an island off the coast of South Carolina is causing quite the stir on social media lately. If you're planning on visiting Morgan Island in the near future, you might find it difficult considering that it's home to over 4,000 wild monkeys. We'll be right back. Ghosts, aliens, cryptids. These are a few of my favorite things. And since you're listening to the show, I'm willing to bet that you love them too. But if your interest in the paranormal extends beyond this state, then Paranormality Magazine is right up your alley. Paranormality Magazine has tons of stories uploaded daily that cover a range of topics, from tier lists of your favorite horror movies, in-depth analysis into supernatural experiences, and much, much more. And if you're finding yourself wanting to get involved with this incredible community, you can submit your own story detailing your experiences. I have been hooked on reading these articles, and I truly think that if you enjoy this podcast, then you're going to love Paranormality Magazine. And that's why I've become an affiliate, and now you can sign up using the coupon code SPOOKSHOW along with anything that you purchase from the site. Visit ParanormalityMag.com/SPOOKSHOW today to kickstart your new paranormal obsession. That's ParanormalityMag.com/SPOOKSHOW. There's something about bridges, particularly old ones, that lend themselves to tales of ghosts and hauntings. These structures are ripe for tragedy, crossing potentially hazardous places such as waterways or chasms. Here in upstate South Carolina alone, there are many stories about haunted bridges such as Poinsett Bridge in Greenville County, Booger Jim Bridge in Cherokee County, Crybaby Bridge in Anderson County, and another Crybaby Bridge in Union County, and the bridge over Ghost Creek in Lawrence County, just to name a few. There is one bridge in the upstate that very well should be haunted, but I've never heard any reports of ghosts or haints lingering in its vicinity. Fars Bridge is on Highway 183, the main road between Greenville and Pickens. It's only a two-lane bridge, yet hundreds of cars cross the Saluda River at this point every day. Though there are no reported hauntings, the bridge does not lack for tragedy. There have been many drownings and accidents, some of which resulted in criminal charges, and any of which could lend themselves to a good ghost story. As always, a bit of history. The Farr family settled in western Greenville County in the 1700s. James Madison Farr was born in 1789 and died in 1862. He is buried in the Berea Baptist Church Cemetery. As an adult, Farr purchased Chick's Mill on the Saluda River. By 1867, the bridge was known as Farr's Bridge, and F.M. Marchbanks had taken over maintenance. An 1869 map of Greenville County shows the bridge as named Farr's Bridge, as well as Farr's Mill. The turn of the century saw heavy rains, flooding, and damage to many upstate bridges. Two of the main routes to Pickens were over Farr's Bridge and Cox Bridge, further downstream. In 1905, both bridges were struck by flooding. Cox Bridge was damaged, but repairable. Farr's Bridge was destroyed and had to be rebuilt. That same year, Alistair G. Furman, along with others, proposed the construction of a hydroelectric plant on the Saluda River at the location of Cox Bridge. In June of 1905, construction began on the project. The bridge was rebuilt again in 1926. In 1951, Farr's Bridge Road was redone to straighten out some curves and make the bridge safer. Interestingly, the bridge is referred to as Highway 416 instead of 183. The old bridge abutments can still be seen just south of the current bridge. But that is not the entire story of this bridge. There have been multiple drownings in the vicinity of Farr's Bridge. In 1926, several young men were fishing near the bridge when their boat began to take on water. All the men were able to swim to shore, but one, Harry Dill, who was 20, wasn't able to make it and drowned. The 1930s were especially tragic. In 1931, Donald Woodson, who was 17, drowned while swimming near the bridge. In 1938, another young woman, Rudette Brazy Nichols, age 23, was found dead in the waters. One witness thought that there had been foul play, and there were suspicions that the woman had been poisoned, then thrown into the water after she had died. A coroner's inquest found that there had been no poison in her body, and water was found in her lungs, indicating that she had drowned. With murder no longer in play, the prevailing thought was that Mrs. Nichols had committed suicide. According to Greenville News, Nichols had visited her sister the night before and left her 8-year-old daughter, her pocketbook, and some money, and had disappeared. There were also reports that she had been in ill health before drowning. The next year saw 3, possibly 4, tragic deaths. Ossie Hester, age 16, drowned while swimming in June of 1939. The state newspaper said that there had been another drowning just 3 weeks prior, but we haven't been able to find information on that one. Later that year, in late October, 4 people were driving across the bridge in a Ford A model coupe. The car ran off the bridge. The driver and a young man survived, but 2 teenage girls, Gertrude Sprouse and Frances Sanders, both drowned. Any one of these tragedies would have been enough to engender tales of hauntings. However, there are 2 more stories that deserve a bit more attention. Mays Cleveland Jr. came from a prominent family in northern Greenville County. Jeremiah Cleveland was one of the first settlers in the area, and the community of Cleveland bears his name. Jeremiah laid out a town just south of there and named it Marietta in honor of his wife, Mary Williams. Mays Sr. was the grandson of Jeremiah and at one time was the largest landowner in the county. He owned a hotel founded by his father, a grist mill, and a sand pit which provided construction materials. Mays Cleveland Sr. is most remembered for founding the Greenville and Northern Railway, later known as the Swamp Rabbit. Mays Jr. continued his father's business success. In 1927, Mays and his wife Daisy moved into a grand new home on the new Gear Highway in Marietta. Sadly, Mays Cleveland was not able to enjoy his home for too long. In August, Cleveland decided to go for a swim. He parked his car at Farr's Bridge, removed his clothes, and swam across the river in his underwear. Several fishermen spotted him and begged him to get out of the water because he looked exhausted. Cleveland didn't comply, but continued swimming. The fishermen left to get a deputy sheriff, but when they returned, Cleveland was gone. Cleveland's body was never recovered. The fishermen's accounts in the news make Cleveland's drowning seem very suspicious, as if he were intoxicated or suicidal. Perhaps it was just a hot August day and he let heat and exhaustion get the better of him. We will never know, but there is just one more body to the growing number of potential ghosts around the bridge. Sadly, Mays and Daisy's magnificent home in Marietta fell into decline. It was offered for sale, but was finally demolished just this past year. Just about every state has a crybaby bridge. The story usually involves a mother throwing a child from the bridge or taking her life with the baby. The stories tell of the sounds of a child crying when one crosses the bridge at night. South Carolina has two such bridges, one in Anderson County and one in Union County. However, only Farr's Bridge has documented evidence that such a tragedy took place. In 1934, a fisherman pulled a bundle over the river. Inside was a two-day-old baby boy wrapped up in a blanket, stuffed into a pillowcase, and tossed into the river with a flat iron. The following day, brothers Paul and Thomas Finley were arrested for the crime. The baby was the child of their unmarried 16-year-old sister, Helen. The brothers claimed that the child had already died, but that they had no money for a funeral, so the child was tossed into the Saluda River from Farr's Bridge. An autopsy found water in the lungs of the baby, indicating that drowning was the cause of death. An affidavit from Mrs. J.S. Finley, the mother of Paul and Thomas, said that the two were taking the child to a relative's home and that the baby was alive when they left the house. She also stated that her daughter Helen, the mother of the baby, thought that the child was still alive at the time. The Finleys were held in jail in Greenville awaiting their trial for nearly a year. On Halloween of 1935, they were finally tried for the murder of their nephew. During the trial, the child's mother, Helen, said that the baby was 7 months old, not 2 days as previously reported. She said that both she and the child had been very ill and that the child had succumbed to that illness. The brothers had taken the baby for burial but decided to dispose of the body in the river since they had no money for a funeral. J.S. Finley, the patriarch of the family, testified that they had followed doctor's orders and done all that they could do to save the child. Apparently, their testimonies convinced the jury, as Paul and Thomas Finley were acquitted for murder, despite testimony from medical officials that the child had drowned. It seems that there were no charges for the illegally disposing of a body, if that was even a crime at that time. The outcome seems suspect to me, but not having been there to witness the demeanor of the brothers, I guess we'll never really know. Were they really upset over their nephew's death, or was the child merely an inconvenience for an unwed mother? Regardless, this was just another in a long line of tragedies at Farr's Bridge. Despite all of these deaths at Farr's Bridge, there are no reports of hauntings here. There are no tales of mysterious orbs, spectral mists, or unsettling cries around the site. Paranormal investigators haven't been flocking to the site with K2 meters, EMF detectors, or EVP recorders. Out of curiosity, I checked Dunham's Bridge further downstream in Saluda on the Greenville-Anderson County line. There were about as many drownings in that area. It seems that this was the case for many bridges at the turn of the 20th century. There's probably good reason for that. Cars were in their infancy and lacked many of the safety features found in today's vehicles. The same goes for bridges, which were often constructed out of wood and lacked adequate side rails. Accidents were bound to happen. These bridges were usually miles from the nearest town, and there was no EMS to respond quickly should an accident occur. It seems that nearly all old bridges should be haunted if a tragic death is the criteria. Perhaps one reason Farr's Bridge has escaped the tales of haunting is that the present-day bridge is unremarkable. Given the amount of traffic on Highway 183 and the lack of access to the banks on either side of the bridge, one can't just linger about to see if something paranormal appears. Maybe one of you should plan a nighttime kayak trip and just hang out under the bridge to see what you find. And if you do, let me know. Coming up on South Carolina Spook Show, an island off the coast of South Carolina is causing quite the stir on social media lately. If you're planning on visiting Morgan Island in the near future, you might find it difficult considering that it's home to over 4,000 wild monkeys. We'll be right back. If you're anything like me, free time is limited. So things like yard work are just not doable. And if you're also like me, you don't even own a lawnmower. That is why All Above Landscaping is the right choice. All Above includes a variety of options when it comes to your landscaping needs, including lawn installation, design, irrigation, debris removal, maintenance, and much more. If you're in the city of Sumter and you're looking for reliable service at a friendly price, give All Above Landscaping a call today. It's 803-464-7414. Mention that you heard this ad on this podcast and you'll get a special discount on your first service. Again, that's 803-464-7414. Call All Above Landscaping today. island off the coast of South Carolina is causing quite a stir with its population of 4,000 plus wild monkeys. Morgan Island sits around 80 miles south of Charleston, and the 4,489-acre outcrop consists of a mix of creeks, marshland, and high ground strewn with mature trees and palms. On TikTok, videos taken from passing boats offer a glimpse of what the mysterious island is like, with troops of monkeys running riot and signs on the sandy shoreline warning, quote, "Do not feed, approach, disturb, molest, or injure the animals." The sign also notes that violators will be prosecuted. The monkeys aren't native to the island, and 1,400 were shipped there in 1979 following a herpes outbreak at a primate research center in Puerto Rico. Since then, the colony has grown, but numbers have been largely contained due to the fact that up to 600 monkeys are taken away each year for animal testing purposes. According to the Post and Courier, no testing is done on the island itself, and instead, monkeys are sent to researchers working on vaccines and medical treatments. While the island is owned by the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources, the colony is managed by the Federal National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. A private company is hired for the actual care of the animals, with this contract worth several million dollars a year. Members of the public are forbidden from stepping foot on the island and is only accessible to trained researchers. But for those of you who wish to get close to the island, there are several outfitters running boat tours, with the route running around the periphery. Low Country Tidal Tours runs a Morgan Island tour for $250 plus gratuity, and it says that it's one of their most requested trips. The tour company notes, quote, "Morgan Island itself has a fascinating story, and seeing these monkeys in the low country landscape is nothing short of surreal." To date, the tour has been deemed as excellent by all reviewers on TripAdvisor. One tourist wrote, quote, "We took a trip to Morgan Island to see the monkeys. Great trip. Lots of monkeys," unquote. Another happy customer echoed similar sentiments, writing, quote, "My wife and I were celebrating our 30th anniversary. We heard about Monkey Island a few years ago and have been trying to see the monkeys. Captain Scott was simply amazing. He set the date and time, took us to Monkey Island, shut the boat off, and dropped anchor. Within 10 to 15 minutes, monkeys came out of nowhere, and in another 10 to 15 minutes, there were dozens of monkeys all around us. It was a memory that we will never forget," unquote. Drone footage uploaded by one Low Country Tidal Tours passenger reveals that there is a jetty on the island for researchers to dock at. There are also several outbuildings for conducting routine veterinary care and storing necessary supplies. Along with boat tours, several helicopter companies in the area offer trips circling Morgan Island, so passengers can get a bird's eye view of the monkeys swinging in the trees below. Have you had the chance to visit Monkey Island? If so, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. Hello, everyone. Thank you again for listening to another episode of South Carolina Spook Show. I'm trying to do these a little bit more frequently, probably bring them to you maybe every couple of weeks instead of every month, or in the last case of my last episode, hopefully more than just like 2 or 3 months at a time. I've got so much material I want to bring to you. It's just a matter of finding the time to sit down, record, edit, all the stuff. But anyway, thank you again for listening. If you don't mind sharing this with someone that you think may enjoy ghost stories or UFO stories or true crime, if that's still a big thing now, especially if they are either from the state of South Carolina or if they currently live here and you think it might be something they enjoy, share it with them. You can let them know we're available on all the podcast platforms of your choosing. And wherever you're listening, if you don't mind leaving me a rating or a review, wherever you can, it helps me out so much, you have no idea. You can also follow the show on social media. It's Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and on Threads. It's at South Carolina Spook Show. Also on X, it's at SC Spook Show. And if you have your own personal stories that you want to send me, if you want to be interviewed with your own story, or if you want to send me some ideas, you can always message me on any of those social media sites that I mentioned before, or you can email me directly. It's scspookshow@gmail.com, and I would really appreciate it. If you don't mind checking out my other podcast, it is called When Words Fail, Music Speaks. I do that with my buddy James Cox and our friend Amanda Dolan, and it's been such a blast having another guest on the show to be able to talk music and mental health. So if you're into that, Go check it out. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts. Who is Nathaniel Roland and what was his motive for killing Samantha Josephson was written by Dan Keene for thesun.com. The Haunting of Forest Bridge was posted to randomconnections.com. And then finally, the article about Morgan Island was written by Sadie Whitelocks for dailymail.com. All articles and stories read on South Carolina Spook Show are the property of their respective authors and is used for purposes of commentary and review. No copyright infringement is intended. Thank you again for listening. I'm your creator and host, Blake Mosley, and this is South Carolina Spook Show. Y'all stay spooky.
Isn't always easy. In fact, we all battle depression during life's ups and downs. Music has always been the thing that we can rely on to get us through the tough times we all face. The podcast, When Words Fail, Music Speaks, with hosts James and Blake, discusses the healing power of music. They interview bands, break down genres, review band biographies, and a lot more. On When Words Fail, Music Speaks, enjoy interviews and lively discussions about musicians and songs you know and love. This is a podcast any music lover will enjoy. Add When Words Fail, Music Speaks to your podcast playlist right now. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and wherever you listen to podcasts.